commitment that he had to our country and its people, you know, was not, in my opinion, enough credited. But I think that he was always, whether it was pre-democracy and post-democracy, they're so much in love with our country. And that was really something, I think, as his daughter Sarah said, his first love was New York, but then he became in love with South Africa. And I think we as South Africans, a free South Africa, owe a huge debt to him. And, you know, as we were talking about the Henry Kissinger moment, I was with him at the inauguration of Nelson Mandela. And he has that ability to just command the moment. And we met Yasser Arafat, we met Fidel Castro, and all of these people he put onto film for that documentary. But adding to that were issues like AIDS, and we did a documentary together on Nkosi Johnson, a 9-year-old boy who was inflicted with AIDS, and his journey. So it really traversed not only political issues, but also anything that he felt passionate about. And so I think as we remember Danny, we must not only think about South Africa, but the many things that he was always involved in or always being alert.
And Rory, we just have 10 seconds, but he was working on a book on dealing with cancer.
Right to the very end. He was a protean figure. He produced more media than major networks could do, and thousands of people. And to the very end, he was documenting his life and working on a book on cancer that'll be coming out soon on coldtype.net.
Well, we'll link to all our interviews with Danny Schechter. Thank you so much, Rory O'Connor here in New York and Anant Singh in South Africa. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Special thanks to Renee Feltz and to Dina Kust.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today we'll ask, how do we go about fostering meaningful conversations about race in our society?
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. to hear part two of Maya Shenhwar speaking about her book, Locked Down, Locked Out, Why Prison Doesn't Work, and How We Can Do Better. Professor Rachel Cunliffe will also be giving commentary during part two.
Building a different world beyond prison is not just about knocking prison down, it's about raising up not only alternatives to dealing with conflict, but a world where people are cared for. If people are cared for, you're going to see a lot less harm. You're going to see a lot less violence, and you're going to see fewer survival times, too.
Again, that's March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. for part two of this conversation with Maya Shenhwar.
Don't let Rupert Murdoch control your newscast. The KBOO Evening News provides breaking news about local issues, from water fluoridation to immigration raids. We bring you daily coverage of what's going on in Portland, Cascadia, and around the world. Tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News on KBOO, your community radio station.
Good morning. You are tuned in and listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland. 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9, and points east along the Columbia River Gorge. In the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3, and in the ether, it is KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. Cecil Prescott and myself are so happy to join you in not the Ides of March, because, well, we're past the middle of the month. So,
well, we're past the middle of the month, but you know what is coming up?
Easter?
Well, before Easter and after Easter. Before Easter is April Fool's Day.
Uh-huh.
And after Easter is tax day.
Tax day. Hey, Mama, the best I could do was like tax day, because I'm thinking, what other significant day is there in that? Well, okay, look, just in case I have a friend listening, yes, your birthday is significant in April. I better get that out real quick before I'm in trouble.
But Steve, our engineer, does something very unique. I'm combining those 2 days I mentioned. Steve, what is it that you do?
Oh, my favorite thing to do is mail in my taxes postmarked April Fool's Day.
Hello.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could wax both poetic and non about taxes and tax day, and I'm going to spare everybody.
So I want to read a short article from the Paper of Record.
Oh, there is a Paper of Record. I didn't know Cable had a record. I mean, a paper.
Well, we don't.
Oh, well, what paper of record?
The New York Times.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that one would be definitely the paper. You know, I thought we were going local, and I was in shock.
Oh, no.
You should see his face. It was worth 1,000 words easily.
So we were talking earlier this weekend about a program this morning. And as we were planning, you know, something came out. A news flash came across last night. So I need to read
it. Oh, like an epiphany.
So this is dated March 22nd from the New York Times.
Ooh, recent.
And it says, Howard D. Schultz, the chief executive of Starbucks, said in a letter to employees on Sunday that baristas would no longer be encouraged to write the phrase race together on customers' coffee cups, drawing to a close a widely derided component of the company's plan to promote a discussion on racial issues. While there has been criticism of this initiative, and I know this hasn't been easy for any of you, let me assure you that we didn't expect universal praise. Having baristas write on customer cups, Mr. Schultz wrote, which was always just a catalyst for a much broader and longer-term conversation, will be completed as originally planned today, March 22nd.
And when did it start?
A week before,
mm-hmm.
March 15th.
So one on the Ides, no less.
But you know, the article continues. The end date had not previously been mentioned publicly, including during Mr. Schultz's discussion of the initiative at the company's annual shareholders meeting last week. But a company spokeswoman, Laurel Harper, said employees had been told about it.
Bless her heart.
Asked whether Starbucks was reacting to criticism, Ms. Harper said, this is not true at all. When we initially began the Race Together initiative, what we wanted to do is spark the conversation, because we believe that this is the first step in a complicated issue.
Oh.
She added, leading change isn't an easy thing to accomplish.
And since we are really not adept at that, said that person.
Laura Harper.
Well, I can't really say that because she didn't say that.
Oh.
You know, we know when to get out.
Haven't said that.
I said that. She didn't.
She said that.
Had she said that, she would possibly have manifested some wisdom, but, you know, that's not for me to say.
So,
I just said it, though.
Yeah. So I imagine, you know, this campaign, which was sincerely you know, after much thought, that the company wanted to engage the public at. So, you know, as you go to your coffee shop and you order your coffee and they
take... And you want it really quickly.
And what...
And you want to get out of the way of other people.
But what if I want it black?
Ooh. That's a revolutionary idea.
But they said it's... But, you know...
Don't get me started, man. Okay, so here's the thing. This is the thing that gets me. And I just want to chat with folks. And it's not necessarily even about the whole issue of it being race. It's this whole idea of the soundbite conversation. Now, if you know anything about get your coffee at a coffee shop culture, and I know something because every once in a while I'll go out. I prefer coffee shops that are not owned by evil empires. And, you know, so I like local folks. But even local folks are busier than no one's business, as they say. Okay, pun intended. They are very busy as well. And it's not always an opportunity to engage in conversation other than skinny half-calf, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And the people who are usually getting coffee are in a hurry to get to work. The people who are making coffee are in a hurry to make your coffee so you can get to work so you don't complain. And hopefully they'll get a decent tip. So where is the opportunity for coffee conversation?
Well, I think for me at least, this whole episode is symbolic of how we might approach issues that are complicated. We think as if a brief conversation with a busy person trying to manage different things at one time might be a way to address an issue that is very complex. And if we have a conversation, however brief, somehow we have managed to examine and wrestle with an issue that will then allow us to drink our coffee and go on with the rest of our day.
Feeling content and self-satisfied.
Perhaps, yeah.
Oh.
And that's, you know, I don't want to critique too much the intentions of those who initiated this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I assume the motives were good.
And assume good intent.
Intent.
Right.
So the challenge then is how to go beyond just ridicule as we did in the beginning of this program.
More like irreverent consideration. Irreverent questioning. In other words, I won't say I was necessarily ridiculing, but I'm asking questions, pointed questions, in an irreverent but humorous fashion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I'm sticking to that.
Okay.
I meant it.
You meant it.
Don't assume anything by my intention.
I assume the best of your intention. I'll speak on my intentions, however. I wasn't so noble as you might have been.
Nobody said anything about noble.
But it raises for me in terms of, you know, there's been so much in recent months, in the last year and a half, or 2 years, in terms of how do we address issues, particularly of race, with the numerous incidents both locally and throughout the nation. We have fumbled our ways in which to address a very complex issue. And I go back to two things. One is the poll I saw recently where people said that race relations are much worse since the president came into office than before. And second, how the president has had to find a way to address these issues periodically. So when he first ran for office in 2008, he was confronted by some remarks that his pastor made about race, and you know, the YouTube clips,
yes, which the soundbite,
the
clips.
Soundbite, and which, you know, if you actually listen to Reverend Wright, the sermon, it's much more complex and. But that's another
matter. It's very complex, but to sum it up, you would listen to the song by Nina Simone, which was Mississippi GD.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was an appropriate response.
I think so. So I think periodically, and so he made that great speech in 2008 about race, and then, you know, different incidents happened from time to time. There was that time about the Harvard professor, and they had the beer summit, and then there were more profound issues about whether it's police violence or whether it's about the incarceration rate. But we as a nation, I think, are stumbling in terms of how to talk about race. So we want to do a couple of things this morning. One is, as Celeste mentioned, in terms of how do we address complex issues, but also what are some of your thoughts, or what are some of the ways in which, and I don't want to get away from race, how do you, and I don't want to say talk, but how do you wrestle with this, both those who are near and those who are near to you, and those who you find it difficult to raise these issues?
So in other words, we're looking at how ways in which you frame and initiate the conversations about complex issues. As Cecil said, it doesn't have to be about race specifically, but we don't want to get away from it either. But at the same time, I'm looking at the fact that the way society is now, with our culture being both a soundbite culture and often at the very same time trying to grapple with very deep and complex issues in a short amount of time with short attention spans, how do we, again, is this a legitimate fashion to balance the short and superficial with the deep and profound?
Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. And we'll go to George. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. Thanks for bringing up this topic. I've been wondering if something I came upon in a book by one of those dangerous English left of left center, perhaps, or left of way out anyway, a book published in 1992 with the title is No Such Thing as Society? Question, and the subtitle is Individualism in Community, and it's by a fellow named John Kingdom, who was a professor at Sheffield Polytechnic. And I was just looking through it, and the Charlie Hebdo affair had just occurred, and I had gotten on the air to just say that I was very unhappy with Charlie Hebdo after I thought it over. At first I wanted to support them, but then I thought about some of the dreadful things that had been happening for 100 and some odd years to people who are of Islamic faith in the Middle East, so that the Western powers could have empire. So I spoke out, and then I began to wonder if I had been a bit rash, and I came on this remark by John Kingdom in his book, No Such Thing as Society. Kingdom is complaining about the use of humor by the Thatcher, he calls them Thatcherites, in Britain, to smear the image of leftists. And I thought, now what's he going to say here? And what he said in part is this: yet popular humor is no laughing matter. It is part of the establishment game to deride those who would upset the constitutional apple cart, a far more effective means of control than bringing out the special patrol group. There are, of course, alternative comedians, such as Ben Elton, but they remain within certain constraints of political propriety. their outrageousness more usually confined to saucy sexual matters. And then he says, the very appellation alternative demonstrates that they are the exception, which proves the rule. And he adds, whether or not the jokes are good, they are important agents of socialization, creating the terms of the basic common sense of social life that all reasonable people will endorse. A common sense in which the left is loony, scroungers are lazy, the poor are careless, and the rich are rich because they work harder. We all laugh, but perhaps the joke is on us. So that's his quote. What do you think of that? And not just in terms of Charlie Hebdo, but does this apply somewhat to the use sometimes of humor in this country? So I'll get off the
internet. No. Stay put. Stay put for a minute, because we got to have a discussion here. You know, you bring up something that I find really interesting. And when I'm not allowing myself to be entertained, I pull back and get that objective distance, and I look at just about all forms of media productions, and look at them as programming and indoctrination and what have you. And what I hear him saying is that all they serve to, well, not all, but one primary task they serve is to set the bounds of our correct thinking.
Yep.
And I'm both saddened and amused by this, and I'm not outraged, because those who are in power and who do make this kind of programming and do set these rules, they want to keep us thinking in a very constrained and conscribed fashion, so that we don't wake up. You know,
that's
it's kind of like
thinking.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying, well, you cannot wear white after Labor Day, because if you do, you're gauche. And if you don't understand why you shouldn't, well, you're not, you know, you have no class. Now, that is an arbitrary rule, and we act as though it was also chiseled into the stone with the Ten Commandments, you know. And we have to recognize sometimes when hegemony, there we go, is creating the arena and herding us into the arena of thought.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
You know, I totally agree. And, you know, so they'll tell you these are the allowed, these are the okay alternative thoughts that you can have.
I think that's what Kingdom meant in that book, yeah.
You know, I have to agree with you, you know, and that's one reason why I found this whole project by Starbucks interesting, because it takes that. I couldn't tell whether or not this soundbite approach was legitimate or not, and I wasn't real quick to dismiss it, because maybe in their limited minds and the arena that they were put in to think, they thought this was going to work.
You know, I hadn't heard of it, but I sort of wondered about it, and I thought, well, we're all members. We're all out of Africa. We're all of the human race. So I was sort of wondering, I thought, well, maybe it's just one of those, let's all be together. And But after I read this thing by John Kingdom over the past few days, I was wondering, was there something about Charlie Hebdo that was different? And then I heard the evening news on the same day that the massacre was covered, and a woman who had lived in France spoke out. This was the 5 p.m., I think, KBOO News. And she said, well, you have heard about the Charlie Hebdo cartoons making light of or criticizing Muslims, but you may not know about the ones done about a year ago by Charlie Hebdo, which portrayed I think there were something like 100 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram.
Right.
And she said those cartoons by Charlie Hebdo pictured those schoolgirls as very ape-like and several of them as pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I thought, my God, nobody told us about that until the 5 p.m. news on KABU. And I said, thank you, KABU. So, but I had lurched into a kind of criticizing Charlie Hebdo, and yet later on I thought, well, maybe it's good to have a discussion, and that doesn't mean we're insensitive to the murder of those cartoonists, but were the cartoonists somehow, did they get suckered into doing something, or did somebody manipulate them? But how could they have produced cartoons like that of the schoolgirls who were kidnapped without realizing? What on earth did they think? So I don't want to take up time. I thank you very much. This is a very, very important topic, I think, as usual.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that book by John Kingdom. I will certainly seek it out and read it.
Yep, that's yes. On page 36, I think.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your call, George.
Hey, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil. I'm here with Celeste.
Good morning.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're initiated our conversation this morning by reflection on the Starbucks campaign, Race Together, and the sudden ending of phase one. So your local barista will not write Race Together as she tried to figure out how to write your name.
Yes, or at least get something on there that also has your name and, you know, skinny half calf, no decaf, no milk, no cow.
I just want it black, but
yes,
I'll go with that.
I like it black and sweet, not too sweet.
Let's go to our next caller. Frances, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, you guys are good. I wasn't going to call today, but hey, here we am.
I'm glad you did.
I think Starbucks had a sweet idea, but to initiate conversation. But yeah. I think what happened was the employees didn't want to do it. So they had to. They got complaints from employees being forced to have that discussion, and they didn't like that.
Well,
one thing about Starbucks, I will say, there's only downtown in the mornings when I used to go to work early in the morning. The only place there is the Starbucks in Pioneer Place. And if you go in there early in the morning, all kinds of people are in there, and they always play good music. So it is kind of a different atmosphere. That one on Pioneer Place is open from, I think,
yeah, I like that.
11
that's,
at night.
Yeah, that's the one I like.
I was thinking when they talked about Starbucks, I was wondering, you know, about that discussion. I just read a little article that Teresa mentioned, and it's called, it was in the New Yorker, actually, not too long ago, How Does a City with Such a Progressive Reputation Still Not Be Able to Handle Its Police Department? And that was it was about Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
Spoke about the young man who was beaten by the police over by Roosevelt High School.
Yes.
And he was just recently found not guilty by the judge, who also very much scolded the police officer.
Yes. Yes.
It's a very recent development. But I was thinking about that article, you know, it's like the discussion at least has gotten outside of Portland. So many things have happened in Portland that none of the rest of the world seems to know about, and it is because I think of Ferguson. They're looking at more cities now, and the stories are being told more. And when you talk about race, I think we cannot avoid the conversation. I remember reading a book called The Hidden Wound, and it was about a young man who was a descendant of a slave owner, and how he was amazed at how they just didn't talk about it. It's like, if they didn't talk about it, then it didn't exist. But it did exist. So they need to talk about it just to get over it, so that everybody can get over it and we can move on. Because it really isn't. It is about race, but it's about injustice, and that's what we need to talk about. If we look at the injustice that's going on in our country right now, it is shameful, and it's nothing. I mean, the rest of the world now can see all that. And we're still going around the world pretending like we care about people's rights and their democracy while we're blowing them up. And then they look at and see what's happening here in our country, and we do look like the big bad monster.
We do.
So, yes, we do.
So
the ugly American.
And then what happened with, I remember Clinton was having town halls, and all of a sudden they just stopped.
Who was? I'm sorry.
President Clinton started town halls.
Oh, well, yes. You know.
Remember that?
Yes. Yeah.
So? Why did they stop, I wonder?
Sometimes...
Maybe too much truth was coming out all at once.
No, I don't think they were ever supposed to last that long. You know, the whole idea, and
what
it's kind of like
intention,
the rollout.
I wonder.
Probably to at least start the conversation. We'll impugn good intention. But
yeah, well, I don't know what happened there, but...
Well, I think that's...
There were some other things that happened in his life.
And, right. Well, yeah. I think that...
So I feel that perhaps there was some kind of intimidation going on there not to continue these discussions.
Well,
I'm not sure about that.
It might have been, but I think it's symbolic of the approach we take in this nation. We try to look for a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work as we want to drop it because it's too difficult.
It's too uncomfortable to acknowledge that it exists. I don't know. It's embarrassing to a lot of people that it exists.
Yeah.
And I think they just would rather pretend like it doesn't.
You know,
it does,
and it's easy to pretend it doesn't exist, as you suggest. I was wondering, Frances, you know, in these conversations at Starbucks, and I meant to ask my sister, she's a manager of a Starbucks in New York, whether or not, what type of training were offered to the employees about how these conversations should take place? I mean,
yeah, because I think some of them might be more comfortable with it than others.
Sure, and
shy, you know, they just don't want to talk about anything really.
No,
so I think the intention may have been a good one, but it's just realizing that you can't make people talk about things like that.
No. Hey, well, we appreciate you calling.
Yes.
You take care.
Okay. All righty.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we'll go to the next caller, Ross.
Good morning, Ross.
Well, and good morning to you. It's good to be talking to two folks who aren't afraid to talk about this. I want to say that I haven't seen any of the the stuff at Starbucks because I don't go there. I'm like Celeste. I prefer to local and. Restaurant or whatever, I just simply do not go to chains if I can avoid it. But I have to say, I am impressed, and I want to commend and applaud whatever. Well, I don't know all the motivations for Starbucks to decide that they were going to venture into something controversial, and something I hope they consider this to be positive, because. Frankly, it runs counter to the general, you might say, the capitalist cultural initiative that's always out there, which is to neutralize discussion. And
yes.
And I remember some years ago, I worked in the area of promoting safe sex and preventing sexually transmitted disease and all those things. And I designed some posters that could be put up in coffee houses, and one was a picture of a very elegant couple, like a morning after they're having breakfast, and there's very discreetly the condom packages on the tablecloth, and they carries a caption of saying condoms because you care or something. Anyway, I brought it to the coffee people, folks. I don't think betraying any confidence, if I talked to them about, couldn't we put up something like this in your coffee shops? And they said, well, you know, this is a wonderful idea, but you know, what we sell when we're selling coffee, we're selling a place where people can get away from issues, yes. And get away from concerns and be comfortable by themselves with their enjoyment of coffee and some kind of neutral place.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And you know that. That's actually so contrary to the iconic coffee place is, that coffee shop in the Greenwich Village or off in some corner, a bunch of bohemians sitting around and arguing about important things in life and filled with political posters on either side, every side of every question, framing the walls. And, not what we saw. That's not what is permitted by the bottom line.
Yes.
And so if they were going to try to venture over that line, I commend that, although obviously it takes more thought and work.
Well, you know, and it's not their first venture either. And that's one of the things that Cecil had had mentioned, the fact that it's the latest and perhaps the boldest effort that has come out of the company. But it's not the first one, because they've talked about everything from healthcare to gun rights. And so it's really interesting to hear that they've scribbled something on everybody's paper cup, you know, which is in and of itself kind of it's humorous in that it's both superficial and profound. Again, when you stop and think about what a coffee shop really is, it's not a place of escapism, even though somebody might have thought it was a little safe haven. It's a hotbed of brewing thought.
Well, ideally, I think it's a community center.
So, well, that's where I was headed.
And as Ross mentioned, in terms of the, you know, and I think like an independent coffee shop where you may not be worried about you do want to keep the doors open, but I think it's more conducive to people coming together and sharing thoughts, playing music and things like that. So,
yes, and maybe some solitary pursuit. But at the same time, I want to give them credit where credit is due. Because once again, people are complaining that was a very superficial way to deal with a nuanced concept or conversation. However, in our speedy world, maybe sometimes a quick approach is not a bad thing. Maybe that is a prelude to something more profound.
I agree, and I cannot imagine the people of Starbucks being so naive as to think that they were going to solve the problem of race by doing some things. But they were going to do what little thing they could do. What can we do? Somebody must have asked.
Yes,
this is important, and we all have to ask that.
Yes,
and shall we be ridiculed if I? Well, what am I going? I don't think I'm going to take my Cadillac across country this year. I'm going to go by bus.
Yes.
I'm going to say, but am I saving the earth? No, but I think I'm going to do it because I don't want to have this gas guzzler on the road that far.
Yeah.
So. Okay, makes sense. And if we're going to criticize them for the quick approach or the superficial approach, then I guess we need to take off our t-shirts our bumper stickers. But thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you so much. Be well and have a good day.
You too. And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in the Gorge, 104.3 in the Valley, and in the web, on the web, through the web, KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio.
I want to commend to people an article that Van Jones wrote, posted on CNN website, which he critiqued those who are making criticisms of Starbucks.
They get a lot of airtime from us.
Right.
They should cut a check to KBOO.
Maybe we shouldn't say their name. That's right. Okay, we won't mention them again. But in the meantime, we'll go to our next caller. Joseph, good morning.
Good morning to you guys. I wish I'd heard the whole program, but I'm really busy getting my kindergartner into the classroom during that. And so I heard a mention of the Charlie Hebdo, and I don't want to rehash this if I miss somebody reply to this, about the schoolgirls that were kidnapped in Africa and how they were portrayed as ape-like. I think, and if please help me out here if somebody already called in, I think the point of that cartoon was not that they were, but that's the world doesn't seem to view black children as important, and that's why Hebdo drew them that way, as to say, this is how much of the world sees them. They're not important.
Okay.
And that's my understanding. I've looked at many of his cartoons, and he just skewers everybody, but I don't think he intended to skewer the girls or be disrespectful. I think it's that we just don't put the resources to finding or rescuing those children like they do if they were white. And as a white man, this is my belief now. This is how it's what it's gotten to, or how it's been for so many years. I mean, I was raised in the South, and I worked for a man, and I didn't know this till later, who belonged to the John Birch Society. And we would go service televisions in all kinds of houses, black and white, in a town in Arkansas. But he would make comments to the side, and I finally spoke up and said, you know, though that may have been a poor black house, but did you notice how clean they were, how respectful they were, as compared to many of the, and I pardon the expression, poor white trash houses that we went to? We got into many discussions about famous black people throughout history that I'd read about. So this is so endemic. It's just, I think that what you're saying is Starbucks is trying to help solve a problem, and that would be great. Maybe it'll start a discussion. So I don't know if anybody made that comment.
About
the cartoon.
Yeah, thank you for that, for your comments.
For that piece of insight, yes, because there are a lot of folks maybe who are just hearing conversation and haven't actually seen the cartoon or didn't have a context.
Right, and I just want to say your program is amazing, the comments that you guys make. Celeste, I heard you say it was like you were in a stream of consciousness, but just before I dropped my son off, about how we're being just corralled into this, and pardon the expression, vanilla way of thinking. It's just so watered down. There's no color to anything, no different sides to anything. We're just being steered down this narrow path. So thanks for that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you for sharing the story that you had with your employer. I think that is what I think the intentions of this initiative was, was to get people in their setting to begin having conversations.
Yeah, this was 1970.
Oh, yeah.
I was working for my best friend's dad, and I would hear this all the time, and I just couldn't stand it. I had to counter it. I had to give him a different side to things.
Yeah.
But I mean, I see this and hear this. I belong to the Southern Poverty Law Center. I give them money, and they are rooting out stuff all the time, but it's a huge work.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
It's going to take a lot of talking to people who we normally don't talk to. So,
exactly.
Thanks so much.
Okay, well,
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye bye.
And before we go to our next caller, hold on for 30 seconds or so. Let me remind those who are listening that at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour, a program of social political commentary. At 10 is Air Cascadia, presenting cutting-edge news with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Locus Focus host Barbara Bernstein's guest is Jackson County farmer and director of Our Family Farm Coalition, Elise Higley, who will give us a status update on the anti-GMO ordinance that passed and the lawsuits against it. At 11 o'clock, it's Disability Awareness with host Grace Eagle Reed, a monthly show about issues affecting people with disabilities and their community. And at 11:30, the Monday Morning Radio Zine will hear our fifth partnership show with Oregon Community Media. Today, we'll talk about marijuana issues that affect the state in our new era of legalization with folks at three other community radio stations around the state. If you're in Portland, the weather today is showers. Back to normal.
If you're in Portland, the weather today is Portland.
And thank you, all those who are listening, KBOO members, for your support. And if you're not a member of KBOO, why don't you surf over to KBOO-FM and click on the tip jar and become a member.
Please.
In the meantime, give us a call at 503-231-8187.
Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I just, as I was listening, I was thinking that here in the U.S. we overthink things and we compartmentalize things and we decide when it is appropriate for the profound, when it is appropriate to be frivolous, and that,
we
think more than we
yes,
are.
Yes, we do.
And if we could be more soulful and less in our brains, we could have a better time with each other.
Well, let me ask you a question, and I am not being frivolous, and
sure.
It's sometimes I believe because we do have this programming overlay on how we talk with each other, we don't give enough thought to how mm-hmm. we say. And being a member of the not majority culture, not dominant culture, I feel sometimes, and I'm saying that we don't give enough thought to how certain words, phrases, ideas, or communication dynamics are not helpful. But they're part of the norm, but they're not helpful. And so they need to be overthought, maybe just a little bit. And maybe overthought is the wrong phrase for me to use, but they need to be reconsidered. Here's one, okay? Every now and then I get chastised by my friends if I call one of my female friends a hero, you know, or I say, you guys. And they'll go, we girls, or we women, or we sheroes. And I think about how that's such an automatic response for me. And I grew up and I've worked in primarily a male culture, except for the last few careers, last two, when I was a nurse and for the job I have now. But you know, it didn't occur to me that I could be exclusive like that, and I have to, from time to time, sift through language. So, on one hand, you are absolutely right, but on the other hand, I think, and there's that phrase, that deadly phrase, think, in my head, like you were saying, we need to maybe communicate more with our hearts and souls than just our brains, so that when we do talk, we're feeling each other instead of talking at each other. Is that making sense?
That's making total sense to me. And I think if we were more in the heart, we would automatically maybe think the things through and not just blurb them out also. I'll balance. No, that makes sense to me.
But absolutely. I do like what you said about let's not be so overwrought and mm-hmm. let's find a way to actually touch each other's hearts.
Yes, that's kind of the point that I was, hoping to make.
Well, you do.
Thank you,
Linda.
Perfect point, Linda.
One comment from Judith. She writes, I'd like to see Howard Schultz embark on meaningful conversations about white privilege with others who are very wealthy and could be very influential in the conversation.
I'd like to see a check cut from Starbucks to KBOO, because we said them. And maybe if our listeners, and especially our members who have been very helpful with us for the past 40 some odd years, would write them and tell them, and then just, you know, point them to More Talk Radio for this day and this link and say, look, you want to further that conversation? You should cut this radio station a check. But, you know, it's not just that. My upset with them is the fact that they have, on occasion, been known to run small businesses out of areas by being unfairly competitive. Okay, where's the mea culpa in that?
Well, and I think to go back to Judith's comments mm-hmm. about the conversations, and I think certainly that the CEO has access to, you know, the country club.
Hello.
And what type of conversation that he has with other mm-hmm. people.
That we don't hear.
I would like to be a fly on those walls. But we have three callers in 12 minutes.
So let's go. The lines just lit up. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. So this isn't quite about Starbucks. It's more about the conversation about race.
Well, it's a little bit about a lot of things.
No,
you know?
I was just saying what I wanted to talk about.
Sure, go right ahead. Oh, okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
Okay. Recently, Eric Holder came out with the two reports, you know, the Justice Department came out with the two reports about Ferguson, and one of them was all these bad things that the police department there was doing. But the other one was that Darren Wolfson didn't do anything wrong, that they found Darren Wolfson's DNA on Michael Brown's palm, and they found Michael Brown's DNA on the gun. And it's clear that what happened was he was trying to grab Darren Wilson's gun, and Darren Wilson shot him in self-defense.
Mm.
And,
okay.
You know, if we're going to have a conversation about race, is it ever going to include the fact that Darren Wilson was innocent and kind of got railroaded and his career got destroyed?
Well, Darren Wilson is a millionaire now. So I think, and there's a young man who's dead. So I think...
And we don't know for a fact if that is all accurate. Okay, I'm not real quick to assume anything about how an investigation is actually done. How many have we had uncovered later to find out, oh, well, that DNA wasn't actually where we found it, or that wasn't that person's DNA. I don't care that it has the imprimatur of U.S. Attorney General. I don't care. This is the country that had no problem at all lying to a whole state of black citizens and telling them, oh, no, slavery hasn't ended yet. Okay? Spare me.
So, Michael, I think you... Michael, I think it might be interesting, and we don't have enough time, because I believe you come from an ideological viewpoint that I know it's different than the point I come from, and I think it's often difficult for those who are self-described conservative and self-described progressive to have meaningful conversation, because each one of us come from our ideological point of views and references. So I think the attempt that Howard Schultz was making is, how do we bridge those gaps to have meaningful conversation where we actually hear and listen to one another rather than trying to, you know, make...
soundbite statements?
Well, not soundbite, but I want to honor where each of us, you know, come from, but also to be able to wrestle in such a way in which we can leave it not saying, I got you.
Well, that would be wonderful. I have a couple of friends who are very liberal, and we get together for lunch all the time, and we try to do exactly that, and it's not simple. But, I mean, just, you know, let's say... we were in a coffee shop, and one of us was behind the bar, and the other one was buying a coffee, and we tried to have this discussion that we just had. You know, it wasn't really like, to my perspective, it wasn't really like we ended up with a meeting of the minds in any way. You know, and this was just on the phone on a talk show. You imagine this kind of thing in a coffee shop, and, you know,
Well, you know, let's say this for our defense as human beings with like 9 minutes on a talk show that's about to wrap up. If we were at a coffee shop, I think we would be able to have more time to talk, and I would be able to show you something or discuss something, and you would be able to show me or discuss something, and we might be able to show the grounds upon which we stand, I think, a little bit better. Because, for example, you probably may not know what I was referring to. I was talking about Juneteenth and the whole idea that the whole state of Texas did not tell any of its black citizens, and I call them citizens as opposed to slaves, that slavery had ended 2 years after slavery had ended. So I don't believe everything I hear from my government. And so that might make a difference to you, or it may not. And then you may offer me something. And so that's the beauty of a face-to-face conversation that could possibly be sparked by a short-term ignition like Race Together. Who knows?
So we got to go, Michael, but thank you. And
Bye.
And it sounds as if you were endorsing Mr. Schultz's approach. Maybe
the
coffee shop is a place to...
I've been saying all along that we need to consider that maybe there's more than one way to talk about stuff and just kind of lightly poking fun at theirs. But do call us back, Michael, and talk.
Let's go to the next caller. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Oh, good morning. Wow. That leaves a lot to say, but there's a short period of time, I realize, so I'll try to make it quick.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I'll just comment since Michael came on. It just really bothers me when someone comes on and just makes such a flat general statement without really the facts or even acknowledging that the Attorney General in Missouri, McCulloch, had taken on an eyewitness, their eyewitness, who turned out to be a racist and a liar.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll just make that quick comment about that.
Yes.
Okay, so a couple of things. Also, a comment was made a couple of callers ago in regards to saying how people don't take it so seriously when there's black hostages, let's say. And what's funny about that is not too long ago I was watching an old Dave Chappelle show, and he specifically talks about that and flatly says, do you ever notice that there's never really any black hostages taken because we just don't really have all that much. We're not worth all that much.
There's no cachet.
There's no cachet in being black, being a black hostage. You know, if anybody knows Dave Chappelle, he just cuts
barbed satire, right? Cuts right to it.
Right. So that guy was pretty right on in his comment there. But the other couple of comments, just because, like I said, I came in late and it ties into some points I just want to make in regards to just coffee, that coffee is the second largest traded commodity behind oil.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you were mentioning about, I understand you don't want to support corporate, and neither do I. But the thing we have to understand about the history of racism in coffee is the subjugation all of Latin America.
Yes.
As
yes.
one of the commodities that comes from there, and
yes.
it's still controlled mainly by a few, mainly U.S. corporations who import and export.
Absolutely.
For most of the coffee that people buy, and even fair trade, the term gets abused by many people. Yes. So I want to just talk about the people need to understand that wherever they buy their coffee, most of the time, there's a lot of racism involved in terms of where the coffee originates from, and the people who actually grow it and sell it get the smallest pittance of the money. And to tie that in, if anybody has never heard of a documentary, great documentary, that was actually at the African American Film Festival back a few years ago. It's called Black Gold. And I would tell anybody who loves their coffee, which is most people I know, they should watch that if they want to get a very good idea of the trading of coffee and who really makes the money and what goes on in that. And we're not talking about just Latin America, but also
parts of Africa,
and
Ethiopia,
Indonesia as well.
Absolutely.
So, I just wanted to make those comments, and I appreciate the conversation. And what my finish was saying is that coffee clutches were very popular at one time.
Yes.
So when you're talking mm-hmm. about people getting together in coffee houses and not just going and staring at their video screen and so forth.
That's right.
That more people should consider, if they really honestly want to bring in conversation about race and social justice and so forth and so on, that people literally start creating coffee clutches at coffee houses so they can sit down and have a good discussion and air it out.
All right. I love it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, and to go back to something Michael said and our last caller just mentioned, the person who got on to the trial was not only a racist and a liar, but they had purposely wormed their way into the whole process. So that's one reason why I'm not really quick to believe everything. We got one more. Let's try to get Judy in really quickly. Good morning. Call earlier, Judy, so we can talk, too.
Good morning. I'm calling because I don't know, and I'm assuming you haven't seen the March 10th Tribune business page of the Tribune. The picture on the front of it is, and I think I have enough time to describe this. Have you seen this?
We have 30 seconds. No, I haven't.
30 seconds. Mm-hmm. There's a black gentleman standing next to a white woman. The white woman has on a sweatshirt with a Starbucks logo. And the outside rim of it says, I heart guns and coffee. And the Starbucks mermaid is holding two guns in her hand.
Hmm.
So I think that there's a lot, a picture is worth a thousand words. And I don't know what the message is that they are trying to send. The article is about PCC Swan Island.
Wow. So the woman actually, her shirt has nothing to do with the article. It just happened to be an interesting coincidence.
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, if the article's not about coffee or Starbucks, I'm going to assume that, but I'll try to find it. But thank you for pointing out how sometimes there's subliminal or accidental messaging.
Yes, this is a loaded picture. Please do look at it and come back to it another time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to leave everybody with the thought. Watch this movie. I watched it last night because I'm a sci-fi buff. It was based on a story written by Philip K. Dick, and it's called Radio Free Abelmuth. And it's an interesting idea about how we think what we think, what we think about how we think. Anyway, we're glad that you love talking to us and listening to us here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Please support us and support yourself by calling in early and conversing, whether it's short and sweet or profound and deep.
And enjoy your beverage of choice this day.
Yes.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Occupy the Farm, playing at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, April 2nd at 6:30 p.m.
Our main concern is water right now.
The university actually shut off our water.
What we're going to be doing is handing buckets over the fence.
Occupy the Farm tells the inspiring story of 200 farmers who occupy the last piece of farmland in California's urban East Bay, planting 15,000 seedlings to feed the community and disrupt plans to build a shopping mall. That's Occupy the Farm, Thursday, April 2nd, 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at KBOO.FM.